This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. You probably have never heard of Mossack Fonseca. It's the fourth biggest offshore law firm in the world, but you're probably going to hear a lot more about it in the coming days. The Guardian newspaper has just gotten its hands on a massive trove of 11.5 million files leaked from the law firm. As hundreds of journalists are poring over the files, a pattern is emerging of how the world's wealthy, including many heads of state, are hiding their money with the help of companies like Mossack Fonseca. Among the findings are revelations that, quote, 12 national leaders are among 143 politicians, their families, and close associates from around the world known to have been using offshore tax havens. The Guardian also found specifically that a $2 billion trail leads all the way to Vladimir Putin, the Russian president, and his best friend, a cellist named Sergei Roldugin, who is at the center of a scheme in which money from Russian state banks is hidden offshore. My guest is Chuck Collins. He's a senior scholar at the Institute for Policy Studies, where he directs the program on inequality and the common good. He's an expert on U.S. inequality and has authored several books, including 99 to 1, How Wealth Inequality is Wrecking the World and What We Can Do About It. Welcome to the show, Chuck.
Hi, Sonali. Great to be with you.
Thanks so much for joining us. So this is a huge, huge story. And it wasn't first leaked to The Guardian. There was a German newspaper that got hold of it. And then The Guardian got a hold of it. And 370 reporters from 100 media organizations have spent a year analyzing and verifying the documents. How do you explain to a layperson? Let's take the case first of Vladimir Putin. How do you explain to a layperson how Putin, with the help of some of his friends and this law firm, has essentially managed to hide something on the order of $2 billion?
Well, with the help of sort of a whole system of law offices, law firms like Mossack Fonseca, they are able to move money around, creating kind of fictional corporations where the beneficiaries are hidden. And that's a key ingredient to this whole thing. So in the case of Putin, he's able to have a friend or a very close associate be the beneficial owner of a corporation that allows the movement of money. Now, we actually don't know if Vladimir Putin is directly involved, but that's basically one of the tricky things about these secrecy jurisdictions. The whole point is to hide and conceal and create these sort of networks that allow you to move money around the world.
And so we've known, of course, for years that rich people do this. We know that to avoid paying taxes on their millions and now billions these days of dollars, they try to essentially create these fictional companies in places where tax laws are non-existent, usually sort of tropical islands and the like. And that way, they basically shield their money from being taxed, from being circulated within their economies. What role does this law firm play in all of this? Is this the firm that essentially helps them directly hide it? And are they even breaking the laws, by the way, when they do what they do?
Well, the law firm is one of the players. Typically, what happens is you have a combination of a bank, a friendly bank. You create subsidiaries in tax haven countries. And the Panama law firm is just one of the nexus points. They're creating new corporations. Apparently, there's some 240,000 sort of entities that have been created through this network to sort of move money. Technically, it's not illegal. But as the consortium of reporters said here, most of the objectives of why these entities are created is to conceal the owners. And that could be not only for tax avoidance, as you said, but also for moving criminally obtained funds, for hiding or keeping people from being embarrassed. So the president of Iceland is very embarrassed because he had holdings in some of the banks that collapsed. He was a beneficiary of some of those bank holdings. He had hidden that through this system of offshore corporations. So he's being called upon to resign. So they're technically not illegal. There are kind of legal purposes, but they're often being used to conceal. So, and there's a global movement to crack down and eliminate some of these tax haven abuses. And I think that this will give them more more power and credibility.
So it's not shocking, of course, that extremely wealthy people are doing this. They have been doing it for years. Part of what's shocking is how many heads of state, politicians are involved, elected officials, people who are supposed to be personally invested in the systems that we have in place so that we can have taxes to build infrastructure, to spend on, you know, our you know, the common good. I mean, politicians, elected officials are supposed to be the first to personally be invested in this system that they are expected to preside over, but they are among the people hiding their money. So the systems that they preside over aren't good enough for them, apparently.
No, apparently. I mean, you have the president of Pakistan, the president of Iceland, president of Ukraine, 8 members of the Politburo from China, sitting members of the House of Lords of the British Parliament. The list is incredible, but it's conspicuous in its absence of U.S. names. And you have to wonder, either A, is the consortium protecting a group of the funders that fund the consortium? Or will they be releasing those names in the coming weeks? We've been told, The Guardian says, this is simply the first tranche of information releases. But if they don't name names in the United States, it will completely lack credibility, because we know U.S. billionaires, U.S. corporations are among the leaders in driving the use of these offshore systems, and that the United States itself is a tax haven for certain kinds of activity.
So, and I'm so glad you brought that up. I mean, you know, Vladimir Putin, who is, of course, has been one of the U.S.'s sort of leading rivals of the past few years, is the focus of this. And we have Pakistani Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif. There's the Iraqi head of state, Ayad Alawi. There are, you know, Petro Poroshenko, the Ukrainian head. So all of these heads of state from some third world nations, some Eastern European nations, and Iceland, as you mentioned, and there's even some UK politicians, but I definitely noticed nothing from the United States. And there might be, as we speak, billionaires and millionaires and maybe even leading politicians quaking in their boots right now.
Well, if this consortium of journalists is doing it their job, those people are absolutely fearful. We know that Panama, you know, the way tax havens work is that people in a home country like the United States sort of have their preferred places to go. We know about the Cayman Islands. Panama is a huge tax haven for U.S. and North American tax dodgers and criminal activity. So we know that if this Panamanian law firm is at the center of this, we know there's got to be hundreds of U.S. Actors that are involved.
So what needs to happen right now? Because if action is to be taken, are we going to be relying on the very same people who are supposed to be, you know, watching and enforcing laws, but themselves have found to be implicated? I mean, setting aside the fact that there is nobody from the U.S. yet involved, say in Russia, if there's anger over what Putin has done, you know, how can they fix it with Putin in place?
Well, there really does have to be a global movement. And we know that David Cameron and other leaders, the French President Hollande, have all said, you know, in the coming weeks, they want to convene a kind of a global gathering looking at these issues of tax abuse. In the United States, we have legislation to push for transparency. We in the U.S. have a huge leverage. If we're organized and put pressure on our politicians, that will actually leverage the system globally. Of course, you know, we're dealing with the current political system we have, but that's true for everything we care about. We have to push there is legislation in Congress, for instance, to disclose beneficial ownership. So you can't, Sonali, you can't go off and get me to create a subsidiary corporation for you to hide your money. That the actual owners of those systems would have to be, the corporations would have to be disclosed. And then the United States pushes that out in terms of global treaties, because the large countries are actually you know, have a lot of leverage to deal with. You know, we can say, look, we won't enter into trade agreements or treaties of any kind with the British Virgin Islands or some of these countries that are being used as tax havens. And that would ultimately change the whole equation.
Right.
So the U.S. has a lot of potential. We in the United States have a lot of responsibility and a lot of leverage to fix the system.
And also we have the issue of international politics involved here. One of the revelations that came out of the Panama Papers was that 23 individuals who've had sanctions imposed on them for supporting the regimes in North Korea, Zimbabwe, Russia, Iran, and Syria have been clients of Mossack Fonseca, this law firm that whose 11.5 million files were leaked. And their companies were harbored by the Seychelles, the British Virgin Islands, Panama, and other jurisdictions. So, you know, what's the point of, say, sanctions? Whatever one feels about sanctions, what's the point of imposing sanctions on a country to get it to do the right thing when those who simply, you know, go through loopholes violate the sanctions and then simply contact Mossack Fonseca and say, all right, you know, help us out here. The sanctions have no teeth.
That's right. I mean, essentially, these tax havens provisions should just be outlawed. And if the United States and other sort of major countries where there's huge capital flows simply outlawed these practices, required the complete transparency and disclosure of beneficial owners, that would have a huge ripple. And then we say, you know, we won't honor financial exchange or treaties with some of these smaller countries. That this is their bread and butter. If they lose access to U.S. markets, they don't have these tax havens will vanish. So we have huge clout to change this.
Now, Mossack Fonseca was also working with some massive companies that already have a tarnished reputation, companies like HSBC, which has also been, you know, known to, say, work with drug lords in Mexico and work with hiding money offshore. How much of a ripple effect could these revelations have? Time magazine had an article entitled Panama Papers Could Lead to Capitalism's Great Crisis. And also the fact that they're coming at a time, at least here in the United States, and more people are agitating for higher minimum wages and have this, you know, serious anger and suspicion towards the world's wealthy and the system that the world's wealthy are invested in. Could this be a straw that breaks a camel's back?
I think it's a key element of a populist pushback. For instance, we know minimally that $1.2 trillion of U.S. wealth are hidden in tax havens. We know that trillions of dollars of private corporate wealth. So these corporations and wealthy individuals are taking their money out of the United States. I mean, it's still here actually in U.S. banks, but it's being booked in these offshore tax havens. And in the meantime, we're being told, you know, oh, our local jurisdictions don't have the money to have public services, infrastructure. So this is the hidden wealth of nations. As wealth concentrates in fewer and fewer hands, the growth of these tax havens has paralleled that. So the world's billionaires are taking their money and playing these shell games around the world. And if we to come together with, you know, across nations to clamp down on these hidden shell games, we will recover the hidden wealth of our nations
and
be able to invest it in our communities again.
Right. I mean, this is, you know, when we hear big corporations and wealthy people saying things like, well, you know, we need genetically modified crops because we have to find a way to feed the world's poor because there's just no money to do that. Or we need to, you know, be fracking to have more access to natural gas and oil because there's no money to invest or not enough money to invest in renewable energies. This revelation really gives light to that on a global scale. There is tons of money out there that's just hidden in what sounds like a conspiracy, the shadow financial system. But of course, you know, and we know now that the shadow financial system is very, very real. It's no joke. But it's also something that makes us feel helpless. I mean, how do we combat this, Chuck? How do those of us, you know, the 99% of the world, if you will, who doesn't, you know, have $1 million to our name, many of us not even $100,000 to our name, let alone $1 billion. How do we tackle this huge system?
You know, a couple of years ago, there was a really kind of interesting uprising called US Uncut, which was modeled after UK Uncut. And it was a movement that really drew attention to how these local tax dodgers show up in our local communities. So Verizon, Bank of America, all these companies that show up in our local shopping malls are huge tax dodgers. Federal Express, you know. And and they were doing a really good job making a link between local budget cuts and these offshore tax havens. And I think we're going to see a revival of that kind of U.S. uncut organizing. That, by the way, kind of became one of the streams that led to the Occupy movement. And I think you're right. I think that the this, if you care about global poverty, this isn't just about tax avoidance in the United States. If you care about global poverty, we know that for every dollar of aid that goes to Africa, $10 of those countries' wealth is being moved out of those nations through this tax haven system, through the wealthy elites and corporations in those countries taking money out of those nations. So if we can, you know, organize a global movement to recover the hidden wealth of nations, that will be huge. But it can start very locally because these bad actors show up in our communities. So I'm hopeful that the Panama Papers revelations will spark again that kind of local organizing that makes the connection between budget austerity at the local level and tax dodging at the global level.
One of the other names that shows up on our TV screens much more than we'd like is Donald Trump. Donald Trump is an international businessman, has holdings around the world. His name is kind of shockingly absent here. One would have, I mean, if I had to pick between who would be more likely to show up in this, which name, Donald Trump or Vladimir Putin, I would have picked Trump. And so we'll, I'm sure, wait to see whether that happens and how that'll impact the U.S. election. I should also add, Chuck, that the revelations here, that the size of the leak is staggering. 11.5 million files, just far, you know, outdoing and outweighing, for example, the WikiLeaks revelations or what Edward Snowden is said to have leaked about the NSA. So this is just massive, and it has the potential to have this long, drawn-out series of stories that emerge over many months, right?
Yeah, I think this is just the beginning of the story. I think you and I will get to talk much more frequently because I think we're going to just see daily, weekly revelations on this, and we're going to see some familiar names there. And I think that I think it could be a powerful force in this election. Because it shows that two-tier world between sort of the billionaire elites and the rest of us, and how the rules are rigged, not just in the U.S. context, but at the global level to allow this money to move around. So I think this is the beginning of something very interesting.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us. Chuck, you have a piece coming out in The Nation very soon about this?
Yeah, hopefully this afternoon. I'll send you a link and you
Post that to our website later today. Chuck, thank you so much.
Thanks, Anali.
Chuck Collins, a senior scholar at the Institute for Policy Studies, where he directs the program on inequality and the common good. This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.